Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How does money management change when we are in or approaching retirement, and what can we do to ensure that we and our loved ones can maintain a decent lifestyle as senior citizens? My guests today are committed to empowering elderly North Texans, and part of the formula is providing them with the sort of employment support and financial literacy that will help them build or stretch their savings and avoid all too common scams and mistakes. Millie Vianda is director of the Dallas Area Agency on Aging. Molly Bogan is executive director of Senior Source. They join us today to talk about seniors' financial challenges as part of KERA's One Crisis Away initiative. Welcome, both of you, to Think.
Thank you.
What kinds of changes have you seen over the past few years in the way people are living during retirement?
I think people are a lot more scared. They're frightened because we know we're living a lot longer and have not really planned as well as we should have planned. And I think that's one of the main issues. And then, of course, health care, the cost of health care. That's another area where it frightens older people because of the, you know, tremendous cost that they will be confronted with as they age and when they retire. And we particularly have seen at our agency and really throughout the community, so many older people feel like they have to continue working or they will not be able to live throughout retirement.
You know, one thing that's really important is to have that crucial conversation with your loved ones about what to do when it comes to finances. People don't think about that. They think about what to do if somebody is ill or upon someone's demise. But what happens when that senior starts to lose some of the faculties that are critical to maintaining a financial situation? So you have to have that open communication, because at what point you don't want to get to taking away the checkbook.
Mm-hmm.
That's as serious as taking away the car keys.
Right.
And so it's really critical to trust and to assign someone to help you with your financial before it comes to that point.
It's funny that those conversations are so difficult, though, because it's almost like the ultimate taboo, especially between parents and even their adult children. Parents sort of get in the habit of not talking about money to the kids, and even when the kids are 50 years old, it can be awkward.
Right. I think we talk about, before our parents get older, to sit down and have that talk about where they want to live, the caregiving kind of things. And financial often is not part of that discussion, and it definitely needs to be. But I think it's been so often parents and children don't even know what their parents' financial situation is. Parents don't share that information, at least traditionally have not.
Well, and there's that sibling issue.
Mm-hmm.
So what you can do, or what I have found, is that you can assign one child who is financially savvy to handle that part of your life. You can assign your medical situation to another child so that the burden isn't all on one individual, and so it's split. But you have to be financially savvy to know what to do, and so it's really critical to make sure that the person that you are giving this authority to is knowledgeable and that you are confident in that knowledge.
And I would imagine that money management changes over the course of one's senior years, so that you might be 65 to 70, feeling great, doing all right financially, and things could be really different if you live to be 90 and you have a number of different health issues.
Absolutely. And I think we need to remember our goal at the Senior Source is to encourage people and enable people to be as independent as long as necessary. So there are many older people that won't need any help with their finances throughout their lifetime. But part of it is for the children and people in the community they're working with to know what stage the older adult is. There could be a 65-year-old that has cognitive problems that definitely needs help from a family member or someone in the community, whereas the other person, 90 years old, is managing just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think you mentioned it earlier, we are living longer. The statistics are 10,000 people are turning 65 every day for the next 19 years.
So, until 2030.
So the population is aging, and for the first time in history of the United States, we're going to have more seniors than we have young adults.
So for people, I mean, there are different kinds of work, right? So if you work behind a desk very often, it's not a problem if you realize that you need to put a few more years in. What about for individuals who have pretty physically demanding jobs that don't feel able to do the kind of work they've done, but realize when they reach retirement age that they don't have enough to give up that income?
And that brings up an issue we do have to remember, particularly when people are talking about raising the age for Social Security. There are people that literally can't, you know, physical jobs cannot work when they are over, say, 62, mm-hmm. which is the beginning. But if you look at savings of older people, if you think of the recession in 2008, the majority of money, that trillions of dollars that was lost the 70% of that money was money from people 50 years of age and older, and they don't have time to make that money up. Looking at various research and studies about how much money do people save, it's really a great majority of the people have less than $100,000, and 30% of people have less than $10,000, older people,
right,
in savings. So it's if I can just mention, too, I think what we do in this country is about 22% or 20% of older people financially are okay. And those are the people we sort of talk about and think about as the older people, because I think the majority of older people, of people in the community, think older people are financially sound, when in fact around 75% truly are not, and one-third of all older people are literally at 200% of the poverty level.
True.
That's $21,000.
Mm-hmm. That's really disturbing to think.
It's a fixed income, and that comes into play when you have a fixed income, when all your expenses are going up, whether it's medical, food, or gasoline, and you still have the same amount of money. You are no longer getting an increase in pay because of that. And you're right. If someone has done just physical work from the very beginning and all of a sudden they can't do that anymore, what do they do? And how do they find other employment? And that brings in the issue of unemployment for seniors, which is an all-time high right now.
So what does it take to find employers who are interested in the wealth of experience and perspective that a senior citizen can bring, whether that's full-time or even, for some people, I guess, a part-time job would be just enough to sort of cover the bases?
We have an employment program for people over age 50 at the Senior Source, and we are there, and we seek out employers who are interested and willing to hire older people. And I think the tide is beginning to change a little bit as we realize all of the boomers, some of them are going to have to stay in the workforce or we won't have a workforce. And the work ethic, the customer service, all those kinds of skills that older adults bring to the table are beneficial in many, many jobs.
I think Molly's right. There has been in the past few years a change where employers consider that an older adult does have greater value. It's in some jobs.
And people may not realize it is possible to draw to earn at least a small income from work and draw Social Security at the same time.
That's right. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
How do you recommend people sort of make calculations about when they should start taking their money for retirement and whether to hold off? Some people are in a position to live on their savings before taking full Social Security benefits. What do people need to think about?
Well, a multitude of things. But in different financial people have different advice about that, you know, how to come up with how much money you're going to actually need in retirement. And if you – I think with a lot of boomers, we're sitting here thinking there's no way we're going to ever have enough money. But you need to sit down, look at your expenses, look at your savings. And I always think it's helpful, if at all possible, to meet with some kind of financial advisor, expert, even someone at Consumer Credit Counseling, someone at the Senior Source, someone that has some financial information to help people look at the different areas that they're going to have to consider. For example, Medicare. A lot of boomers don't realize Medicare is not free.
Right.
I mean, it costs a lot of money. And, you know, there are four parts to Medicare, and three of them have premiums. And research, there have been some things that a lot of boomers, you know, one in seven don't realize that there's a fee. And health care is a huge something that when you're planning for retirement, you need to look at.
I agree, Molly. Definitely, if you're in a situation where you do have some savings, and are you turning 65, do you draw down on Social Security, you should go to a financial advisor, someone you trust, and do your research, do your due diligence, get a referral, make sure that it's someone that is trustworthy, and ask for advice. Doesn't mean you have to take it, but you should at least ask the questions.
I was reading up a little bit on this before you all came in, and I was surprised at the number of warnings about people who claim to be specialists in senior finances who may not have the best interest of their clients at heart. And it struck me that it might be hard to tell, especially if someone is saying to you everything that you're hoping to hear, which is that stick with me and I'll make sure that you have everything you need or want.
Well, right. And the United States Senate just passed a special committee on aging and an anti-fraud hotline. So that's really important to be aware of. And because seniors tend to be alone or not have family around or don't want anybody to know, they're afraid to let people know if something's happened. But for them to pass this and to have this website so you can report fraud, it's really important. And that's why I said earlier, you've got to do your due diligence. Make sure that you know who you're going to. Don't just go to someone who just knocked on your door. Get the references.
Right. Financial fraud, you know, and I'm sure you've heard this too, it's being called now elder financial fraud is the crime of the 21st century. And while I think about 50% of this fraud is committed by family members and caregivers, but the amount that really affects the older adults' dollars are frequently from business people and professional kinds of people that get in and take advantage of them. So it's a huge problem as far as older adults. They're more concerned. I mean, financial fraud is a much bigger issue than even physical abuse, financial abuse is.
Yes, and I believe the DA's office here in Dallas has a person assigned specifically just for financial fraud for the elderly.
So if we have a concern about a loved one, or if someone listening has a concern that they might have been defrauded, they can get in touch with that agency, with the DA's office, and report the case?
Yes.
And actually, Donna Strittmatter is at the DA, at the DA's office, that's over that particular department. And they have several people that just deal with elder fraud.
We're speaking this hour about senior finances as part of KERA's One Crisis Away initiative with Molly Bogan, who is Executive Director of Senior Source, and Millie Theanda, who is Director of the Dallas Area Agency on Aging. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372, send email to think@kera.org, or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Classes are available in everything from fine arts to financial planning. Spring registration is open now. You can learn more and register online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. One out of every three North Texans is without the savings needed to live 3 months after a financial hit. In so many cases, there is nothing left to do but get creative with sources of income, even for people who have hit retirement age. KERA's Courtney Collins profiled 72-year-old Shirley Martin as part of our One Crisis Away series. Let's listen.
When you walk into Shirley Martin's cozy DeSoto home, one thing is clear. In the kitchen, she's the master.
You need to get me a skillet out, please.
Okay.
Yeah, just a little small skillet. No, in here. No, in here.
Today, her daughter Anita is playing the role of sous chef as Shirley bustles from sink to stove to oven. She's making baked chicken, over-seasoned spinach, and she sets the whole dish off with fluffy saffron rice and colorful veggies.
It don't take long because they're, you know, little baby carrots.
Shirley has been cooking since she was a teenager. First, because she enjoyed it.
You gotta love it to want to do it.
Then, professionally.
I started at Hockaday School in 63, and I started out as a line server. So it came up that we needed a cook. So I'm one, I tackle anything. I said, well, I want to take that head cook's position. I did, and I just, we went by recipes, but I'm always one, I just kind of do my own thing. If you kind of put your touch in anything, it makes it better.
She left her job at the Dallas Private School in her late 50s after suffering a brain aneurysm. Once she recovered, she took a few other cooking jobs, one at a church and another catering parties. Now 72 and a breast cancer survivor, she's hung up her professional apron, but still loves the kitchen.
So overall, I've been cooking, oh my God, about 50 years or longer, you know, and still cooking, honey.
Shirley, who's divorced, gets a Social Security check every month and a small annual retirement from her time at Hockaday. But with no savings, she doesn't have enough to pay the mortgage and her bills.
It's hard to save. You save it today, you spend it today.
To stay above water, Shirley turned to Shared Housing, a nonprofit that provides her with tenants. She leases out two rooms in her four-bedroom ranch-style house for $400 a month apiece. Her two boarders are as much a part of the household as Shirley's family photos and antique cooking molds.
If they weren't here, I wouldn't be able to make it. I mean, that's just simple as that. Yeah, it helps out a lot. It really does.
She has family nearby to make sure her tenants are on the up and up.
I have a grandson. He's going to come give him a third degree. And Anita, my daughter that's here, they check him out. They kind of feel him out. A lot of people ask me, how do you take strangers in your home? Well, I just have that faith, and I know they need the help, and I just don't think about it.
Even though a lot of people her age no longer work, Shirley puts in about 18 hours a week with AARP. Part job, part computer training program, it provides a little extra income she desperately needs. She worries about money every day.
Not making my mortgage for number one. And then, of course, the plumbing. Things can happen, bills, your insurance, your car breaking down.
Shirley says while financial concerns are top of mind, she'd rather focus on what's good in her life, a loving family, and those kitchen skills. That's a gift everyone's grateful for at Thanksgiving.
Deep fry the turkey and we do the dressing and the corn puddings. And
Shirley's dream is to one day start her own nonprofit that helps people find affordable housing. She says her love for charity must be inherited.
When I was a little girl, my mother used to take a red wagon and go around in the neighborhood and take up canned goods and stuff for whoever was not as fortunate as we were. And that's the same feeling I have today when I take people in from shared housing or anywhere. You know, I feel that same way. I just think that if I could do it, I would.
And despite her own struggles, Shirley is. Courtney Collins for KERA News.
Continuing our One Crisis Away initiative discussion on senior finances this afternoon, we re-welcome our guests. We have Millie Dianda, who is director of the Dallas Area Agency on Aging, and Molly Bogan, executive director of Senior Source. You know, hearing that very interesting story really brings us to the issue of housing for people, some of whom may choose or need to stay in the place they've lived for some time, and some of whom may be ready to downsize. And I suppose there are pros and cons on both sides.
Absolutely.
And most older adults, when asked, want to stay in their own homes. Mm-hmm. And 80% of older adults own their homes. And that's a high percentage, and even the older people. But 50% do still have mortgages. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these homes are older, and the repairs and that sort of thing. But most people would like to die in the home that they've lived in.
And that's to say that is more economical because it's in their own home, so they're more likely to be happier and to stay healthier. And it's more cost effective to, even if they have some type of a chronic disease, to live at home than to go to an institution of any type. So it's really important. And I think that she has done a great job of sharing and you know, bringing in people to help her stay in her home. And I think that has really a lot of value, not just financially, but socially and emotionally.
I was really struck by the number of financial advice sites for seniors that listed not being socially isolated, which doesn't sound like financial advice, but I suppose really matters.
Absolutely, because I think that's what happens. And when we were talking about earlier about financial fraud, when you're isolated and someone calls or you see something on TV and you think, oh, that looks good, you sort of get bored and you try to find something that would be of interest or to cheer you up. And social isolation is critical.
We have an email here that asks if you would talk about reverse mortgages and whether they're a good idea.
I'm certainly no expert, and I don't know if you are, Millie, on reverse mortgages, but that is an area that I think one needs to be very careful about. Mm-hmm. Some of the readings say that for about 5% of the people that are really, really cash poor at poverty, yet they are really house rich, mm-hmm. a reverse mortgage might be appropriate. And so, yes, I'm sure they are appropriate for some people, but from I am no expert, but I think there are definite limitations. It's something to look into, but to be real careful about.
I agree. I'm not an expert either. But again, one of the things that we have to learn, whether you're in your 30s or 60s, is to ask the questions and to find someone who is financially savvy and that you can truly trust and that there is that experience that person has helped someone. So don't be afraid to ask. You're not going to know all the answers. We don't. But what we do is ask and search for that special subject matter expert.
Don't always listen to that handsome actor, older actor on TV.
Ed Asner may not know what he's talking about.
Right.
All right. Well, let's talk about the differences between people who are living through their senior years as singles and those who are still married. And you know, it's two different sets of situations.
Absolutely. And again, Molly and I were talking about that earlier. It is interesting. I think there are more single people living today that are older and alone. And that's, as we said earlier, that's not necessarily true. Good for you. So you want to make sure you surround yourself with friends and know those people. But financially, again, that can be a burden if you're by yourself because you have the weight of everything on your own shoulders as opposed to sharing it with someone.
Right. And I mean, most of the older individuals who are alone are women. Mm-hmm. And of course, we live longer too. I won't mention that we may be the stronger sex. But I think one thing, and we talk about finances and the whole importance of finances in retirement planning, the whole idea of being socially involved is equally as important, and to have activities and all sorts of things. So I know this is a little off topic, but financial concerns we need to really think about. But the other areas as far as social interaction is equally as important as financial concerns.
Well, it is. And I think that's one of the questions that you have to ask as you're planning. Do you have enough money to be socially active?
Hmm.
Because sometimes it does require money. And what you'll find is that a lot of people will spend that money on their medication or their groceries or utilities, and then there isn't sufficient money for social activities. But I think if you go through your church and those types of organizations, you can find social activities.
So there are lots of people out there who don't need nursing home care, but could use a regular friendly face in the house to help with things like bathing and maybe cooking and maybe running errands, that sort of thing. Is that kind of care covered by Medicare? And if not, what do people do who need it? What are the options?
Well, depends mm-hmm. on their situation. And at the Area Agency on Aging, what we do is we do assessments. If someone calls and says they need assistance, we'll go and do a home assessment. And sometimes we can give temporary assistance. Long term, you have to go to some other route. So again, it depends on the individual and their health activities. What are they restricted from doing? So their physical capabilities may not be enough to justify paying for someone to come in. It just depends on their health.
We found we get a lot of calls for caregivers, not people who need medical care necessarily, but someone to help with the activities of daily living.
Mm-hmm.
And generally that is, you do have to pay for that. It's mm-hmm. not covered by any medical plan that I know of. Again, no expert. But that is a huge need in the community, and it is expensive to have somebody, say your parent has the beginning stages of Alzheimer's or even advanced Alzheimer's, and they would like for them to stay home to have a caregiver in them. There are a lot of agencies, and there's some good quality agencies that provide that service, but it costs.
Mm-hmm. What do you recommend to people who may be concerned about someone who's not a family member, maybe a neighbor, maybe somebody they know from church that they're worried about but realize they have no sort of legal right to interfere with their affairs?
Well, you may not have a legal right, but socially, you know, we have all our values and morals. And I think it's important when you see someone that is showing signs is to definitely have an open discussion, conversation, and make it non-threatening, offering to help, offering to do things or to give support is really the kindest thing that anyone can do, and certainly would want that to happen if you were in that situation. But I think you do need to speak up. It is important.
And legally, I mean, it is the law that if there is abuse, neglect, or exploitation, and you know about it of an older adult, you legally are required to report that to Adult Protective Services. And people in the community know about Child Protective Services and reporting that, but they don't realize that it is actually a law that you report elder neglect.
Absolutely.
Also, but if it's not that serious, there are agencies that you can, like the Senior Source, the Dallas Area Agency on Aging, that you could encourage your neighbor or your friend to possibly get involved, take them down to one of our offices, have mm-hmm. somebody come out for a home visit. So there are opportunities in the community to involve some of the community resources in this kind of care.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen ways that seniors that you work with have reduced their expenses that sort of make sense, that don't feel too draconian, but have made a difference that maybe people wouldn't instantly think of?
I'm not sure I've seen that.
Mm-hmm. So it's pretty much what everybody would imagine you do to trim expenses if you come up short.
Right. And I think because we're living longer, health is the big issue. And so medications are really important. And I think what you're finding is that they will cut social activities to really help cover their medical expenses. And not these folks are not necessarily in the hospital or in a home, but just because getting older requires more attention medically. And I think they're spending their money where they feel it is most important, which is on their health.
And, of course, I mean, I do know people who have, you know, they might want to stay in their home, but they realize they cannot afford that home upkeep, and that's a way to cut expenses. They sell mm-hmm. their home and they downsize to an apartment or something smaller without all of that maintenance and all those property taxes, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it depends probably on what level you are and what resources you have. I mean, we know older people that are really low income mm-hmm. who cut back on prescriptions mm-hmm. because that's the one thing they can. There's nothing else to cut.
Yeah.
But if you have the luxury to have some income, there are ways like selling your house, downsizing on that car, no longer driving that big SUV that you had, or you know, some big gas guzzler. So just the sort of common sense kinds of things. And in Dallas, sometimes those are hard to do.
It's been so cold this past week. What kind of assistance is available for seniors who may be struggling to pay utility bills to keep the gas and the lights on?
Well, again, as Molly mentioned, the Dallas Area Agency on Aging does provide temporary assistance for someone in need who needs utilities. And there are other agencies besides ours that can provide short-term assistance. So if for some reason they needed the heat and their bill was very high and they can't afford it, they can call and get assistance for that. And they simply really can just call 211 and they'll be directed to the appropriate agency.
Similarly, at the Senior Source, we work with TXU mm-hmm. and help with electric bills once a year for low-income older people. But that whole area of the storm and the weather-related things throughout the country are really bothersome. Well, they're bothersome for everybody, but for older adults, and you're talking about one crisis away, what if you were in this snowstorm and a tree fell on your house completely into it? Even if you have insurance, think of all of the that's a crisis, and it's a crisis that seems to be weather-related more often than in any, you know, certainly in the past decades.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking this hour with Molly Bogan, Executive Director of Senior Source, and Millie Vanda, who is Director of the Dallas Area Agency on Aging. We're talking about senior finances as part of KERA's One Crisis Away initiative. If you would like to join the conversation, maybe tell a story or ask a question, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Classes are available in everything from fine arts to financial planning. Spring registration is open now. You can learn more and register online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Millie Vanda, who is director of the Dallas Area Agency on Aging, and Molly Bogan, executive director of Senior Source. We're talking as part of KERA's One Crisis Away initiative about senior finances. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Let's go on the phone now to Gary in Dallas. Hello, Gary.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead.
Oh. Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment about, I've been in home care and assistance, been a registered nurse for 40 years, and as I moved into the home care arena, I did discover that many of the long-term care policies do cover some in-home care, hourly care. Also under the Medicare, Medicaid program, there is intermittent care. So it's not your real custodial care that stays there hourly. Mm-hmm. But the insurance, many of your insurance policies that are long-term care policies will cover some in-home care as well as institutionalized care.
So glad you brought that up, Gary. Thank you so much. Let's talk about long-term care insurance, because this is something that younger people may never have heard of. Older people may have wondered when they should buy a policy, if it would make sense for them. Can you tell us what you know about how it works?
Again, complicated and not an expert, but I think long-term care insurance is right for some people and is not right for others. And I'm sure the insurance group people will be calling when I say this, but my general impression and impression we've gained from the older adults we work with at the Senior SOARs is that if you are at poverty level, number one, you can't afford it, and you won't need it because there is somewhat of a safety net mm-hmm. with Medicaid, at least today. If you have unlimited dollars, if you're really wealthy, you probably don't need it. The middle-income people possibly need it more than others, but I do know with these I think the rates go up, things have changed. I think over the years we've learned a lot about these long-term care policies, and they've changed. But, again, it's something that you really need to talk with your professional about, and not just the people selling the policy, but other individuals that can help you make the decision. So I think it's right for some people and prudent, but possibly not for others.
Right, and you have to take into consideration your health. Have you been healthy all your life, or have you had problems? And that makes the decision easier. But again, nothing like asking the questions and seeking out the subject matter expert.
All right, so what happens when we have a concern about, let's simplify the question, about an elderly parent and their ability to maintain to continue controlling their own finances, whether they've been writing checks that maybe don't seem to make sense or they've been scammed. What do we do about that legally? And then what do we do sort of socially to try and cushion the blow when we approach mom or dad about this need to make a change?
Well, first of all, it's not a 5-minute conversation that you have before Thanksgiving dinner. You know, you really have to sit down and discuss it and be open in, you know, start with heart and just an open discussion, very easy, very, you know, and maybe you don't want to take over the whole checkbook at one time. Maybe you want to leave some money on the table that they can spend freely without you, you know, having to have permission. So look at the situation. Is it just beginning? Has it gotten to the point where you do have to do something? That's important. Of course, you know, the power of attorney comes into play if they're going to give that up. So that's why I said earlier that conversation has to happen before it starts, the decline starts at some point. You know, and I've done this with my daughter. You know, she's in denial. I'll say, I'm getting old. She goes, no, you're not. She doesn't want to admit it. But, you know, it's coming. Mm-hmm. And so I have her on my checking book account so that, because if you don't know this, if you pass and you don't have anyone, that account closes immediately. Mm-hmm. So she's on there so things can continue going on. So you need to have that open discussion of what to do, of what would I want to happen if I become incapacitated or even partially unable to make payments or my bills, the monthly things that come up. You need to have that discussion and make it not just a one-time discussion, but maybe several discussions.
And we've got to remember, not everybody has children to have these discussions. Mm-hmm. So you might need to learn what is in the community there are money management programs that are at nonprofits. We have one at the Senior SOARs. There are, of course, professional money managers that, you know, you can hire to help. But we have money managers that help with budgeting, help with check writing, that sort of thing. And then some older people need to have a representative payee. They realize that they can't handle their Social Security checks, and there are different groups that can be representative payee for older people. So there are resources, mm-hmm. but we all need to think about those kinds of resources before we need them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so, but and not only do a lot of people not have children, a lot of people really don't communicate with their children well, and particularly about finances. So.
Well, and does taking on any kind of guardianship capacity for an older person make one financially liable for their debts in the same way that having been married to someone sort of puts you in the same boat with someone even after a divorce?
No, I don't believe. However, we do have the guardianship program for older people in Dallas that are incapacitated and have no one.
Mm-hmm.
And our agency is the legal guardian, and we're not responsible for their debts, but we handle their debts as best we can when we assume guardianship, which of course is always a last resort.
Yeah.
But there are people, for years I was very negative about guardianships, but there are people that need one, and they are so much better off once they have and happier and have somebody mm-hmm. really taking care of them.
Yeah, they find that it's a relief. They may not know it, but mm-hmm. then it comes as a relief, and that's something they don't have to worry about.
As people get older, how do people feel? Is there a point in their sort of senior years when they know they're okay? Like, you know, we think now about maybe living 25 years after retirement if we retire at 65. Mm-hmm. You might think you're doing great for 20 of those years and then suddenly realize you are running out of money.
Well, I think that is what's happening.
Right.
I think we're living longer. And if you didn't take care of yourself before, you're living longer with a lot of medical issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so you run out of money quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, as Molly mentioned earlier, what you want to do is check out all the resources that are available in the community now as soon as possible so that you are aware of them. It is surprising to me that a lot of people are not aware that there are resources out in the community. And again, they can call 211 to find out what resources are available. But it's important to plan, and I don't think we're planners.
Well, we plan for our children. We know where they're going to preschool and where they're going to college before they're even a twinkle in our eye.
Mm.
But we don't plan for aging, and I think that is because we're all so afraid of aging, and we are afraid. Dealing with aging and dealing with death is something in this society that we have tremendous problems with, so we avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why when we at the Senior Source, and I'm sure you all at the Area Agency on Aging, we get calls from those family members when they are in a crisis,
mm-hmm.
and there has been no planning. I think it's the planning about aging is the problem. Actually.
Right. We're afraid to have that conversation.
Well, and we won't even tell our ages. I mean, you know.
Well, I've heard the advice given to middle-aged people when it comes to financing their children's education. And everybody would love to do this in a perfect world, but it's better to have your kids take a loan because no one will lend you money to retire on, right? Because the chances of being paid back for that are pretty slim.
And that is very sound advice, and I think all parents understand it, and they know that it makes sense. But I think a lot of people today, they feel like my parents paid for my education, mm-hmm. and I should be able to send my kids to at least 4 years of college. And so I think a lot of times people take on expenses of their children and their grandchildren, which is a huge issue now, grandchildren moving back in.
Hmm.
And that's sort of ingrained in us as parents and as grandparents that we should be able to take care of our children. But the times have changed.
Well, and I think going back to our earlier conversation of the recession, I think as you pointed out now, there are more grandparents raising grandkids than ever before. So that brings in a whole other issue and another reason why a lot of the seniors are financially strapped from funds, because we're born, we're caregivers. We are natural. We want to take care of children. That's just innate. And it's very difficult when you've already raised your children and now you're having to help raise grandchildren.
What about provisions for people who have for decades been raising a special needs adult child?
Very challenging. I mean, but the good news is I think there's more awareness now. And in particular, I'm speaking about autism, where before it wasn't, they wouldn't consider it. Now there's an organization. Now insurance will cover. You know, it was very challenging to get attention and medical care. But what we're faced with is when the parents are no longer able to take care of that child, and that child is still. But there are resources again. And I know we say that, but it is true. There are resources for those individuals. And here in Dallas, we have the ADRC for the Disability Resource Centers that help with that.
How does the balance of public and private work to try and protect as many of our seniors as we can? Because there are, you know, there's Social Security and Medicare, and then there are a lot of not-for-profit organizations that are, it sounds like, are picking up a lot of the slack and filling in those gaps.
Well, you know, what people don't know is the Dallas Area Agency on Aging is one of 28 agencies in the state of Texas. And we were formed and enacted under the Older Americans Act in 1965 under President Johnson. And he had the foresight to say, we have to take care of our seniors. So a lot of our funding comes from the federal government. And people say, oh, well, you know, we don't want to. Well, you know, we're paying for it. We're taking care of our seniors. And I think that's really important. And people should be grateful that we have such a government that helps with that. But that's not our only source. And Molly, you have private funding as well.
I think we need both, mm-hmm. definitely. And I don't think it cannot be an either-or situation.
Right.
I mean, you know, some people think the government should do it all. Others think it all should be done by private philanthropy. I don't think in my lifetime I will see it one. I think we need both. Mm-hmm. I mean, we need a diversification mm-hmm.
of funds.
And I just hope, I mean, you know, in all the talk about Medicare and Social Security, you know, before we had those programs in this country, we really had sort of almshouses for older people. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was poor houses. And
it's easy to forget that.
That wasn't that long ago. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I think we all deserve to live our older years with dignity and, you know, with resources in our community, and we need private philanthropy and governmental resources to do that.
When younger people come to you and say, what can I do to prevent some of these heartaches in my old age, should we plan on work? I mean, obviously saving more and working longer maybe than our parents and grandparents expected to?
Well, I think, you know, it's a choice, and mm-hmm. isn't it wonderful to have that choice yeah. at a young age? And to consider it is even more brilliantly if you can start thinking about that now. Do you want to work that long? You know, I used to say, I love my job. I think I could work forever. But as I get older, I'm not so sure I want to work forever. I think I would like to retire. Mm-hmm. So even when you're in your 20s and 30s, you think you can work forever. You feel like you can. But trust me, you're not going to want to work forever. So you do need to set aside some time and money to plan how you want to retire and when you want to retire. I have a friend who wanted to retire at 50, and he did. But he planned it, and he planned it well.
Millie Dianda is director of the Dallas Area Agency on Aging. Molly Bogan is executive director of Senior Source. They joined us today as part of KERA's One Crisis Away initiative. Ladies, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.